Well, I want to begin with a question, and I need everyone to be honest, okay? And I'm going to start with the ladies, and as you're going to see, ladies first is a theme throughout this message today. And here it is, ladies. Here's a question for you. How many of you growing up fantasized about the perfect wedding? I mean, it's like you married the perfect guy, it's going to be the perfect day, you got the perfect relationship, and then someday you were going to have the perfect kids, and you were going to move into the perfect house, and then it's going to be like you're going to be married for 50 years, and you were going to still be in love with each other. Show of hands, ladies, be honest. How many of you thought that? Oak Creek Franklin, come on, let's give it. Let's hear. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your honesty. Guys, how many of you had a very different fantasy than that? That your fantasy was something along like this, is I'm gonna get married and it's gonna be steamy for 50 years straight. I mean, every time we see each other, it's like, I mean, we can't even keep our hands off each other kind of thing. Guys, how many was that your fantasy growing up? Let's be honest. Now, I need everybody to participate with this last question. How many of you are still waiting for your dreams to come true? Well, if that's you, good. Today we are in week two of our series called Relationships on Purpose. And let me just give you just a recap of what the series is all about. Last week I kicked it off by talking about how many of us, here's what we believe about relationships, even though we wouldn't say this. Great relationships happen by accident. And I use this example in the job that I have. I have had countless conversations with people who come to me with just relational frustrations. Maybe they're moving into a relational season, and it's a different one. And then I'll ask my version of, well, what's your plan for that? And I'll get the look of, plan? It's a relationship. Why would I have a plan? And the reason why we feel that way is because we don't connect the dots between planning and relationships. And we also said this last week, we said that much of our relationship frustrations and challenges and even fallouts are actually preventable if we would be willing to approach our relationships with more intentionality, with more purpose behind them. We said that God designed us for relationships, which means he has a plan and a purpose for all our relationships. And when we defer to his plan and purposes, we're not going to have perfect relationships because none of us is perfect. But great relationships is actually possible. Now, the big idea last week, and this is kind of where we're going through the rest of our series, is we looked at God's approach to all our relationships. And we contrasted it with our approach to our relationships. Once again, even though we wouldn't say it, It's what we do. And we use this image of a tug of war, and I was up here on one end, and then we had one of our staff people on the other end, and let me just say, I crushed her every service in the thing. I just want to say, and she hasn't been back at work ever since then. So if you see her, encourage her. And so we just talked about our approach to relationship. It's like a relational tug of war. It's we have wants and needs, and our approach is we try to pull that person, whoever that relationship is, we try to pull that person over to our side. And we said God's approach is completely opposite of that. That instead of pulling the person over to our side, God's approach is we drop our side of the rope, and we walk over to the other person's side. And we said, why we do this is because this is how Jesus approaches relationship with us, and this is where the most life-giving, transformative, deep, loving relationships happen here. And last week, we gave these little pieces of rope to everybody who was here, and we have some extra, and so if you weren't here on the way out, Oak Creek Franklin, you have some as well, grab a piece of rope, and we said, we want you to put it somewhere, because as we journey through the series, we're gonna talk about what does it mean to drop the rope in all these different relationships that we're in. And so that's where we're going over the next few weeks. Now today, here's what we're gonna do. In light of one of my favorite movies, Princess Bride, we are going to talk about marriage. Marriage is what brings us together today. Now, I realize that all of us are in different places when it comes to this whole idea of marriage. Some of you are single and you hope to be married. Some of you are single and you hope to be married again. For some reason, the first a marriage didn't work out. And there's still a lot of fear, maybe pain because of that. And as I said at the beginning, God can redeem and he can heal that. Others of you, you're living together with kind of the testing the grounds to see if you should be married. But then others, you're married. And you would say your marriage is going well. Others of you, you would say, you know, I'm kind of trending to where that song is taking us. Now, wherever you find yourself on the relational spectrum, you're going to connect with this in some way. In fact, if you're single, your tendency is going to be to check out on me here. But here's the thing. If anything, you need to lean in with me. because we're going to talk about God's vision for marriage. And so eventually this needs to be the filter for how and who you date, which we're going to talk about as we go through this series as well. Now, as we think about marriage, I want to ask you a question that my guess would be very few of us have even thought about. Here's the question. What do you think the purpose of marriage is? What do you think it's for? Now, here's the thing. Every single one of us has an answer to this question already. And for many of us, our answer to that question is actually fueling two major myths when it comes to marriage. And these myths, whether we realize it or not, is actually causing us to struggle in our marriage. Here's the first myth of marriage. The point of marriage is my happiness. Now, this is every movie, every romance novel, every TV series. I mean, culture drives this whole narrative. And so it kind of works like this. You know, you have a soulmate, and you knew you find your soulmate when it's just easy, and it's always happy, and there's always kisses, and, you know, when a man loves a woman, is always playing in the background and all that stuff. And you just know that's how you kind of know. And if that's not happening, then something is wrong. You see, your happiness in your marriage determines whether or not your marriage is moving in the right direction. This is actually why people are getting married less in our culture, because they're around other couples and very few of them are happy. It's also the reason why people are stepping out of marriage more. It's because they're not happy. Now, back to the rope idea. It kind of works like this. You've got your side of the rope, and you're looking at your spouse, and you're going, I've got needs and wants, and you're trying to pull that person, and she's never, and he's never, and you're kind of pulling, and you're kind of pulling, and you're kind of pulling. And then you get to this place where you go, if I can't get them over to my side in a certain time frame, well, then I'm going to drop the rope, but I'm not dropping the rope and walking over to their side. I'm dropping the rope, and I'm heading out of this relationship altogether. Now, please hear me. I am pro-happiness, I am pro-romance. But when your primary reason for stepping into marriage is your happiness, you will never be happy because you will miss out on God's larger purpose for marriage. And then here's the second myth of marriage. I have a soulmate. And it kind of works like this. There's this idea that there's one person that God has designed for us, and you know you found that person. It's like two pieces of a puzzle. I mean, they just fit together perfect. And it's this idea of there's always this constant feeling of happiness and bliss, and you complete me, and you had me at hello, once again, is always going around in the background. But the problem is then when you get married and you go through a season when you don't feel those feelings of bliss, which every couple goes through, then you complete me turns into you completely drive me nuts. And you begin to wonder, maybe I married the wrong person. What's interesting is that the Bible doesn't talk about God having a soulmate for us. Instead, it talks a ton about how do we become the kind of person that attracts the right kind of person. So together, we step into God's vision for marriage together. You see, if you believe that you have a soulmate, then you will constantly live with this low level of doubt, because when things aren't going well, that doubt will give you an out. Now, today what I want to do is I want to talk about God's answer to the question, what's the purpose of marriage? And to do that, we're going to look at a passage that has become very controversial over the years. But let me just say this about it. When we understand this passage in its context, I'm telling you, everybody wins. Everybody wins. Don and I will celebrate our 20th wedding anniversary in a couple months. And I tell you, this passage, you're clapping for her. I appreciate that. Yeah, she's not in this service. Maybe in the next one. For 28 years, and this passage has, I believe, saved our marriage. Because when I pick up the rope and I start trying to pull her over, which is my tendency to do, I read this passage and I drop the rope and I go, oh, that vision's too small to live for. That God has a bigger vision for marriage than that. And so the passage that we look at is God's vision for every marriage. And let me just be upfront with you. God's vision is always bigger than our vision. You see, we have a spiritual enemy, and culture will always try to push us for settling for smaller, less, or a cheaper version of what God has. But God's vision is always bigger. In other words, it'll always elevate us. So we're going to look at a passage written by the Apostle Paul. And let me just give you two things up front to think about as we go through this. For some of you, I want to encourage you to see this through, because we're going to read some things that maybe in the past may trigger some things for you, and it's going to be really tough for you. I want to encourage you to see it through. And then here's the other thing I want to encourage you to do. Don't weaponize this. Instead, I want you to personalize it, because that's what it's meant to do. And so here's the Apostle Paul talking about marriage. And as I said at the beginning, he starts with the ladies. Ladies first, here's what he says. Wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands as you do the Lord. And every guy said, yes. And all the ladies said, I am never coming back to this church ever again. Now, unfortunately, the misunderstanding of that word has caused a lot of harm and a lot of damage. But when we understand what it means in its full context, it's actually a very, very powerful idea. And so what I want to do is just take a minute, and I just want to kind of zoom out a bit and help us understand this in its full context. So at creation, God created both male and female, and he created them in his image. And so what that means is that men and women are equal. He didn't create men and then create women here. And I was like, okay, the reason why I created women was to serve men all their entire lives. Not at all. Both are image bearers of God, which means they are both equal. But while they are both equal, they are not equivalent to each other. And so what we're going to see from the Apostle Paul in the rest of this passage is he's going to hash out what this means for both of them. Putting it in our context, it's what does it mean to drop the rope as a husband? What does it mean to drop the rope as a wife? And so what we're going to read and what we're going to look at is not devaluing. It's actually the opposite. And so let's put our passage back up there. Wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands as you do the Lord. I recently heard a story about a guy who went to the doctor with his wife, and he was very sick. And the doctor looked him over, and then he walked the husband and wife out into the waiting room, and he asked the wife to come back with him into his office. And so she did, and he closed the door, and she began to panic. She's like, is something wrong? Is my husband going to be okay? Is he going to make it? And the doctor's like, yeah, everything's going to be okay. But for him to live, he can't have any stress at all. Which means every morning when he gets up, he needs a hot breakfast prepared by you. And under any circumstances, don't have him help around the house. And every time he comes home from work, he needs to have a warm, hot meal cooked by you. And the house needs to always be spotless. And if he has any marital intimacy needs, you need to tend to those needs. And never under any circumstances do you come to him with your problems or any of your emotions. You do this and he'll live. Well, the wife left the doctor's office, went out to the waiting room to her husband, and the husband was like, well, what did the doctor say? What did the doctor say? She looked at her husband and said, you're going to die. Now, let's be honest, it's funny, cute joke and all that stuff. But what's not funny is that for many of us, this is what we think submit means. So let me tell you what submission is not. Submission is not a wife is a doormat to her husband, that she is there to cater to his every wants and every need. That is not what submission is. And submission isn't that a wife never tries to influence her husband. God made you a helper, which means you complement each other. It means you do it together. Submission is actually a military term that means to order yourself under another. And so submission carries this idea that we recognize that God made an order to marriage. And the order to marriage is that the husband is in a place of leadership, which we're going to talk about in a minute and what that actually means. Okay, so stay with me on that. And so to submit means to recognize and respond to your husband's position as a leader. Now, some people have taken this to mean that women should never lead outside of the household, but the Bible seems to fully disagree with that whole idea. One of my favorite leaders in the Bible is a woman named Deborah. She served at what would be like the equivalent of the president of Israel. I mean, she kicked butt and took names. She was unbelievable. But listen to who she's referred to. It says, now Deborah, a prophet, the wife of Lapidoth. Can you imagine being referred to that for the rest of your life? You know, can we shorten that up to Lap? The wife of Lapidoth was leading Israel at that time. And so here's what she was saying. She was saying, when I leave the house, I am a strong, intelligent, confident, courageously called by God leader. But when I come home, I willingly and lovingly submit to the loving leadership of my husband. Now, ladies, I know what some of you are thinking, and it's valid. He's not worth submitting to. And you know what? That might be true. But you don't submit to him because of him. You submit to him because you follow Jesus, who was the most submissive person who ever lived. And he submitted himself to the point of giving his life for you, and none of us deserve it, yet he did it anyways. Now, one disclaimer. If you're in a relationship where that is abusive and dangerous to you, ladies, you don't submit. Instead, you seek safety from that relationship. Now, ladies, you can exhale. Exhale with me. You're done. Okay, you're done for now. All right, now we're gonna shift gears to the guys. And what's interesting is that Paul spends a lot more time talking about the role of a husband than he does a wife. And it's not because the wife's role isn't as important. Here's my opinion on it, okay? I don't know this for sure, okay? It's just opinion. I think anytime you talk about leadership, if you're not clear on what that exactly means, this is where abuses happen. This is where bad things happen. So I think Paul wants to go, guys, this is what leadership means as a follower of Jesus. And so here's what he says to guys. Husbands, love your wives. That's easy enough, isn't it? Actually, not that easy. The New Testament is written in Greek, and there are various 3 to 4 different Greek words for the word love. And the word he uses there is actually not the word for romantic or passionate love, even though that's to be a part of marriage. He uses this word, agape, which is this higher kind of love. It means this, the kind of love God has for his people. And so romantic love comes and goes. Agape love doesn't. It stays. Agape love, you can't fall out of agape love, as is so common today. And so agape love means this. It means looking at your wife and going, I'm in this with you. I will never leave. I am fighting for you till the very end. So what does this love look like? Well, Paul's going to give us a very clear picture of what it looks like. He says, husband, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and he gave himself up for her. In other words, a man should love his wife in the same way Christ loved the church, and we all know how much he loved the church. He gave himself up, he gave his life for her on the cross. And so he sacrificed everything. So guys, do you wanna know how God wants you to love and treat your wife? You want a picture of it? Look at Jesus on the cross. He sacrificed everything. In other words, this is what it means to love your wife. This is what it means to lead your wife. Research shows that nothing will make a woman feel more secure than a selfless, sacrificial man. A recent study was done at the University of Washington, and it surveyed a ton of married women. And the question was asked, when is your husband most attractive to you? And the number one response by far was this, when he does housework. So guys, think about it this way. You are a clean house away from the night of your dreams. You're gonna look at it that way. So research shows nothing makes a woman feel more secure than a selfless, sacrificial man. And so if there's ever dynamics in the house where you see a man basically going, wife, I need you to submit. Ladies, you look at your husband and go, man, you need to die. That's exactly how this needs to look. All right, Paul's not done. He's continuing to raise the bar for us. And he says this, and this is, guys, to make her holy. Holy means to be set apart. And he casts this great vision of leadership here. He says, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word and to present her to himself as a radiant church. And that word radiant can mean splendor. Splendor. Without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. And so here's what he's saying. Guys, here's what it means to be a leader in your household. You need to be so committed, so committed to helping your wife be all that God created her to be, to helping her reach her full God-given potential. I hate to admit this, but this has not always been the case in my marriage to Donna. When we moved here to start this church, I saw it more as a me thing, and that she was coming alongside to help me with that. And I wouldn't have said that, but this was my attitude. This is what I thought about. And so here's what we had in our house. We had my wife, Donna, and she's sacrificing all sorts of things. She started doing jobs outside of the house that were very difficult, very hard, that were outside of what she always felt like she wanted to do, so that I could do what I felt called to do, and she never once complained. Over the last few years, God's been really convicting me, and just time and time again, Mark, you are not leading your wife in the way that I have called you to lead your wife. And so this has been very convicting to me. A little over a year ago, a job opened up here. And Donna and I have always said, you know, we're not going to work together or anything like that for just a variety of reasons. But Jody, who's on our staff, she approached me and she said, I think your wife, Donna, would be perfect. I know that you've always said no and all that stuff. I think she'd be perfect for this. And so I approached her and I said, hey, honey, what do you think? This is perfect for you. This gives you a chance to contribute and use your giftings here to kind of celebrate what God's doing here and all that stuff. And so for the past year and a half, she's been doing that. And I tell you what, she's been crushing it. And it's been really great for me just to kind of watch her step in that and encourage her, because she's always done it for me. And it's just made our marriage better. And so what Paul is saying, he's saying, guys, here's what a leader does. A leader looks at his wife and says, how can I serve you in the way that helps you reach your full God-given potential? And let me just say this, guys. You can't help your wife be all that God wants her to be if you aren't leading the way and helping God be all that you can be. In other words, you need to be the spiritual leader by leading the way and you taking steps with God as well. And so Paul says, the vision for marriage isn't your happiness, guys. It's your wife's holiness. And when you focus on that, you will actually be happy. Well, then Paul skips, I'm going to skip a couple of verses. And Paul is going to then now begin to give us the picture, knowing that all this stuff about submission and leadership and what does this look like, then he's going to start to hone in on God's big picture for marriage. And here's what he says. He says, and if you did any weddings, you probably heard this quoted before. He says, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. And so Paul's saying, hey, we're not primary caregivers for our kids. We're not sex objects. We're not even friends. We are more than that. They are our own flesh. Donna is my own flesh. And so the idea is that the two leave separate lives and then they come together. And once they have sexual intercourse in the context of marriage, they become one person. And so sex is actually the physical example of a couple becoming one person, not physically just, but spiritually. This is a profound mystery. Okay, Paul, well, what's the mystery? What we just talked about, the two becoming one? Nope, not it at all. But I am talking about Christ and the church. The mystery is that Jesus weds himself to us. In fact, if you read the New Testament, you see Jesus is referred to as the bridegroom and the church is referred to as the bride. And so we often think about marriage. We look at it and we go, okay, it's the story of me and my spouse and our family and our lives. And you know what? That's important, but that's just a small part of the story. You see, God created marriage to point to the true story of redemption. That God, because of his agape love for us, he sacrificed his life for us. And someday, he will come back for us and he will consummate it with a wedding. You know, you might look at your wedding and you may think about the reception and all that stuff. And let's be honest, the receptions all play the same song, you know, shut up and dance. I mean, they play all the same stuff, right? And it might've been a good party and maybe a really good celebration and all that stuff. But it will be nothing compared to what God does for us. And so he is fully committed to us for eternity. And so our marriages are meant to communicate his story and his commitment to us. Now, let me just ask you this, not a show of hands, okay? Let me show of hands. Single people who are thinking about being married someday again, or for the first time, and married couples, do you see your marriage through that lens? You know, I think for many of us, we need to shift our thinking of marriage. And when we look at our marriage, we need to think that something's happening between my spouse and me that should be happening between God and me. And when we start to see it outside of my soulmate, my happiness, and our life, and our family, and all that stuff, what will begin to happen? It'll elevate it to something greater and bigger and more. When you get to this point, this is beginning to see marriage at the next level. Well, Paul wraps it up, and he wraps it up gratefully by addressing both husband and wives. And what's great about how he wraps it up is he gives us the key to each other's heart. And he says, however, each one of you must also love his wife. And so he's talking about husbands. So husbands, love your wives as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. Husbands, love your wives. Wives, respect your husband. With all the research that's coming out, this is absolutely brilliant. And so once again, I'm going to start with the ladies. Ladies, a man's greatest need is respect. Doesn't mean he doesn't need to be loved. He does. But respect is the greater need. You see, respect is such a powerful thing in our lives that we will change our behavior for it because God wired our hearts to receive it in that way. And I'm going to tell you a little secret about us, and don't tell anyone else, okay? Just don't tell anyone else. One of the best ways to our hearts is through the words you say. And do you know what doesn't work? Belittling, sarcasm, criticism. See, we would never tell you this. Your words mean more to us than anyone else's words. I can be done with a message and get a few compliments. Always appreciate that, all that stuff. But I can be at home and Donna can come in and she can go, man, that was a really good message today. And that just lands different. I start to puff out my chest and go, really? Tell me more about that. I mean, there's just something that happens there. And so let me ask you this question, ladies. What is one thing you can say to encourage your husband? What is one thing that you can say? And you're going to say, yeah, but he's not that. Don't worry about what he's not. Speak to him on what he could be. You see, you need to believe in him so he can believe in himself. Guys, a woman's greatest need is to be loved. Once again, doesn't mean that she doesn't need respect, because she does. But love is the greatest. And so let me ask you this question, guys. What is one thing you can do to love your wife each day? And I want to give you a couple ideas. One thing I want to encourage you to do is I want you to internalize this sentence. I love you because. I love you because. And I want you to say something very specific to her. I love you because you're such a great mom. I love you because you sacrifice for our family. I love you because you put up with my junk every single day. Here's something else I want you to do. I want you to just ask her this question. What is one thing I can do for you that will show you that I love you? What is that? And then do it. She needs to know, without a shadow of a doubt, that you truly love her. Now, final thing. So I'm going to give you just a couple small tidbits that will just kind of help you take this as you leave here today. So here's the first thing I just want you to do. And once again, single or married. What is your answer to this question? What's the purpose of marriage? And the reason why this is so important, but we would gloss by it, is because your belief about it will determine how you live in it. Are you settling for small, for what culture says, or are you elevating and then rising to where God's vision of marriage is all about? And single people, let me just say this. Don't settle. Don't settle. The second thing I want to encourage you to do is an assignment. Now, for some of you, you haven't been around anybody that has, you know, you kind of read these words and all this stuff. You're like, what does this look like? I've never been around. You didn't grow up in a family like this. You just haven't seen relationships like this. Here's what I want to encourage you to do. I want you to find one or two couples that have been married longer than you, that love God truly and love each other. And I want you to take them out for coffee or take them out for dinner. If you're single, you do this. If you're dating or married, you do this. And you sit down with them and you just ask them questions. Tell us what you do here. Tell us how you love God. Tell us how you take steps. Tell us how you handle conflict. Tell. and you just take notes. And if you're with your significant other, you drive home, what did you hear? What are one or two things that we can do together? What are we doing? Remember, great relationships don't happen by accident. This is giving purpose to that relationship. Final thing, go first. Go first. You might be thinking, well, I'm the only one trying in that relationship. And you know what? That might be true. And you're going, I'm afraid if I do, they won't respond. And you know what? That might be true as well. But go first anyways. Because you can't change a marriage unless you're willing to change you first. Go first. God has a incredible purpose for our marriages. That ladies, you are called to submit to your husband, not because you're not equal. You are. But because you follow Jesus, who submitted himself for you. And guys, you're called to lead. You're called to wear the crown of your own, but not a crown of a power-hungry CEO, but primarily a crown of thorns, who's willing to serve and sacrifice himself for his wife and for his family, because that's what Jesus did for us. And together, our marriage is meant to tell the greatest story, love story ever told. Holly, there's a reason why we get moved by love stories. It's because it points us to the greater love story that we have been invited to be a part of. It is God's great love for you. And when you step into that higher calling, God will elevate your marriage to a place you never thought it could be. And so here's what I want to do. I want to pray for all the couples. You can be married, engaged. And I want to pray for all those who are single who hope to be married again or married for the very first time. And so here's what I'm going to ask you to do. I want to ask you to stand for me. And don't be embarrassed about it. We're going to pray over you. Just stand. It's okay. And for those of you who don't feel like standing, just for whatever reason, relationally, you know, I want you to pray for all the different couples and people who are single. Oak Creek Franklin, I want you to stand as well. And if you should be so bold, couples, would you be willing to reach out and hold your spouse's hand? And maybe you haven't held hands in a long time, but would you be willing to do that? Let me pray for us. Father, this is tough stuff. Marriage is hard. And culture, and we have a spiritual enemy who constantly tries to just lower the bar, cheapen things, get us to settle for happiness, soulmate stuff. God, your calling is higher. It's better. It's humility. It's sacrifice. It's, I'll do whatever. I'll do whatever. Because I don't take my cues from my spouse. I take my cues from you. God, I want to pray over every single couple here. I want to pray for those that are engaged. I want to pray for those who are married. I want to pray, God, for those who hope to be coupled someday and to step into marriage, maybe for the first time or once again. And Father, I would pray that there would be such a commitment to your calling as husbands. And guys, I just want to speak into you a little bit. Guys, God's got a great calling for you to lead. Great calling for you to lead. And it's sacrificial. And it's selfless. May you lead and be committed to leading in such a way. And may you be committed to leading your family spiritually in such a way by first taking the steps yourself. Not perfect, just taking the steps. And wives, the calling is to defer. Not because you're less than. No way. No way. And I pray, God, over all the wives and future wives, and what that means and what our culture tells us doesn't lessen anything. Actually, it elevates. Because humility always elevates. And Father, I would just pray for those who just need healing in their relationship that you would spiritually speak so loud to them. And they would do whatever it takes to drop the rope and go over to their spouse's side. God, we want strong marriages in our church because that represents strong families, strong kids, next generation stuff. God, we defer to you and what you're doing. So Holy Spirit, do an incredible work in our church across the board. And God, may you and what we do point to your story, the greatest story ever told of your deep agape love for every single one of us. And I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.